This hour of the DGS is sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
Let's go! Walks barely down the street.
Good afternoon, St. Louis, DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. So we are Rachel-less. She is on a plane on her way to Japan. We're Amy-less. Amy's not feeling well today. Then she's going to the hinterlands. I don't know. She's going to wherever Amy's go. And so we're girl-less for like 2 weeks.
Just hanging out with my dogs.
Yeah.
Barking with my dogs.
This is going to go bad.
Yeah, it's going to be
great.
It's
going to be awful.
It's going to be great.
Oh, man.
We've done this before. Didn't it go really well then?
Yeah.
Yeah, it went perfectly. We thought so.
Yeah.
Our boss wasn't crazy about it.
Oh, he's like, fine.
He's one of us. What's he talking
about?
Yeah,
he really is,
crazy about anything.
In fact, get him in here.
Yeah, that would actually be great.
Steve would be great.
Yeah.
Steve could do a show.
He doesn't want to, though.
No. Yeah, we've tried to get him on a whole bunch, and he's like, I gotta have him.
He is a very entertaining person.
Yes. Yeah.
Agreed.
He's funny.
Doesn't even know it.
No, I think he does.
You think he does?
Yeah.
Well, we could use more Steve.
We could use more Steve's, just in general.
Just Steve's?
Yeah.
Yes, I agree
Steve
with
Ewing.
That.
If every couple of people you met were a Steve, the world would be a better place.
Let me look in my phone contact list and see if there's a Steve I don't like.
To be clear to both of you, I don't think he means people named Steve. I think he means people like our boss.
No,
Steve.
I thought he meant named Steve.
Yeah. I know both of you like Steve and Jackson.
That's what I thought too.
He meant people named Steve.
Yeah, I did too. That's exactly
what I
thought.
There's lots of crappy Steves out there.
Oh, no. I was like, so, Steve and Jackson.
Oh, here's a Steve I don't like. Yeah, that guy sucks.
Let's call him.
All right.
So we will talk about the debate, but probably not until about 1:30. Then we have Brad Young on at 2:30. We have Robin Wilson, who is the lead singer of one of my favorite bands, the Gin Blossoms, are going to be on with us in about 10 minutes. That should be cool.
Yeah, he's great. We talked to him like, I don't know, was it last year?
Yeah, it was something like that you guys had him on.
Yeah, he's real cool.
Because they were in town for something separate, right?
He seems cool.
Yeah. Are they in town for something now?
Yeah, this weekend.
They're doing Songs for Soldiers this weekend.
Oh, that's awesome.
Tell you a little story about last night and what a bad person I am. So I am, the way I go home, just in case anyone wants to shoot me, is I go down Olive and I turn left on Jefferson, then I get on Highway 40, right? And so I'm in that little stretch on Jefferson and sitting in a stoplight and someone's coming toward me in traffic. And they just turn a U-turn in front of everybody, and now they are parallel across both lanes of traffic in front of me. Just a total D move. And it's this lady, and I immediately go into Dave judgmental phase. That's a bad one for me. Like, when you piss me off, I typically just start judging you. I just start finding everything about you that I don't like, and that you are the reason we can't have nice things, and you're the reason we can't have a nice community, and I bet you're like this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365, all this is going through my head. And then we make eye contact, she gives me a sweet smile and the thank you wave, and I'm like, yeah, honey, you
go right ahead.
You go right ahead.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about that before, though. I do think the acknowledgement of being a butthead helps.
It changes.
It changes everything.
It changes everything.
Yes. I mean, and when I do something stupid, I always like, sorry, my bad.
The wave heals a lot of wounds.
Yes.
I wasn't a wave believer until the last couple of years because I'm a big jerk, right? But I have found, man, given that little wave, you can do
anything.
A lot of piece of crap stuff. Yeah.
Not everything, but, you know.
You know, I'm a double wave guy.
Really?
I will wave first when they're letting me in, and then once I've established, just to make sure I know they saw it, I give it another wave.
I think it's a good move.
Yeah, yep. can't hurt in that case.
Yeah.
That's right.
In that case, even if it is try hard, it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not that much effort.
No, it's very little effort.
Yeah.
And it changes the interaction.
Andrew, it's not that hard to be a good person on the road.
I have found it quite difficult.
I know.
But that's just me, I guess.
But... You're the slow driver guy in the left lane.
I don't even know what's going on the road.
No, he's the reading a novel in
that's
the
what I'm saying. The, yeah. Like, so you're saying you're on the that side
what
of
other,
it.
What other people are doing on the road is just simply not my concern. You know what I mean? I
so got you're my the bad sphere. Person that we need to get waves from.
I've got me. I've got 6 inches to my right, left, front, and back, and then whatever
good
else
bragging.
Happens on the
yeah,
road.
Yeah, don't say those things.
See, you are exactly the issue. Because when you get mad at another driver for a behavior, it's always because you're thinking that person doesn't care about anybody else on the road except for themselves, and you're admitting it.
Yeah, except when...
Celebrating it.
Except when I don't have any headlights, then I need people to know that I'm not trying to be this big of a jerk. It's just happening.
So even
I just don't
you
have
your limits.
Yeah, even I don't want to, like, because I won't drive with my brights on, right? So I won't blast people with the brights. I feel bad about that because I know how much that sucks when people do it to me. You know? So
they
it's
sell
like,
headlights.
I bought some, but this was in a situation. You remember this.
Oh, right. This is in the past. Okay. I thought you meant now. I'm like, this man, like that's been going ago. On for a while. I'm like, you drove a month without headlights?
It's a long time to not have headlights.
I think I would rather, as another driver, would rather have you have your brights on than no lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I was kind of betting on that. I was banking that would be the case. Boy, you have never seen someone's face like my father's when I told him, just to put it on your radar. We're sitting at the Cardinals game together, and I go, just to put it on your radar, I might not have any headlines. He was like, any?
But he's never been prouder.
He was like, okay. Okay.
Did you at least have the hazards?
Yeah, I had the brights. I had brights that worked.
Oh, the brights worked. Okay.
Did he try to bring you up different?
Oh, of course he did. Yeah, he brought me up great. None of this is his fault. I would never.
When do you think he realized he'd lost the battle?
Oh, he lost the battle when I couldn't ride a bike, when I couldn't catch a baseball, when I couldn't throw a baseball, when I couldn't remember to take my baseball glove from the bench out onto the... There's a video footage from the news that my parents always saved of the news did a little feature on Little League, and it was my game that I was playing in, and there's a great, beautiful shot of the dusty, beautiful sunset Little League field, and then right in the center of the frame, could not have framed it better. Spielberg couldn't have. I meet my father out in the middle. He meets me to hand me the glove that I had left on the bench before going out to the outfield.
You weren't like running the bases and then he just like, oh, you stay there. I'll bring it to you. You just left the bench without it.
I just left the bench. I just forgot to get it. I just forgot to take
it. Did you ever catch a ball?
Probably not.
I mean, that's not uncommon for Little League.
No, not at all.
Yeah. But I mean, even amongst like, you know, no one expects a Little Leaguer to be super talented, but even amongst the dregs, I was not a shining force. I usually wouldn't run when I would hit the ball, or I would stay on the base when someone else would hit, and then they would come to the base, and I'd be like, hey, man, welcome to the base.
You didn't know you were supposed to move?
Yeah, and everybody's screaming, you gotta run. I was like, who are they talking to?
You.
whoever,
so
basically,
you
ran the bases.
Whoever they're talking to does not have it together.
So you ran the bases then the way you drive now.
No.
You're just in everybody's way, and you're like, what are you doing? I'm here.
I probably didn't know how to read. So I wasn't reading.
And
I was like six.
And your dad tried.
He tried.
You.
Oh, he tried. Yeah. He tried so hard.
You are the reason.
With
that
me and my brother, neither of us have any kind of athletic sense.
Yeah.
You're the reason that happens. I'm not always upset at a school shooter's parents.
That's a little too far, Chris.
Because it's not always the parents' fault.
I know where you
sometimes
think you're going
they
with that, but.
They raise you well, and you're just a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know where you're going with that.
He stuck the landing on that, didn't he?
No, I don't think you did.
Yeah.
Well, this is what happens when Amy's not here.
Right.
Somebody else has to wear it.
This doesn't... she would have agreed.
Yeah. I don't like either of you very much.
What, me and Amy? Amy didn't even do anything.
Rach would be so uncomfortable right now.
Yep. Rach would be just sitting there going.
She'd be texting me like, what's happening?
Why is this happening? And then I would be turning to my right and looking. And we do this all the time when weird things happen. We're like,
oh, yeah. Like you're not part of the weird things.
Well, I mean, I'm usually a problem.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk to Robin Wilson, lead singer of the Gin Blossoms. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. So about a week ago, we had my pal Dustin Rowe on, who runs Songs for Soldiers. And my band played there for years and years. And it's a really, really great event. Great music. Very family friendly. Take your young kids out. Let them see some great live music. Not enough kids get to see that these days. Saturday, the headliner is the Gin Blossoms, one of my favorite bands. Robin Wilson is the lead singer. He joins us now. Robin, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Your name is Dave, correct?
Dave, yes.
That's who I'm talking to?
Yeah,
hi,
that's me.
Dave. I'm glad to be on your show promoting the upcoming gig. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So, Rob and I, you and I have a lot in common. We're close to the same age. I just turned 60 last week. I know you're a few months behind me. Lifelong musician, played, I'm probably saying Hey Jealousy more than you have, playing in cover bands.
So, all right.
And you were always like that era. Was my wheelhouse, you know, like the 90s power pop, huge fan of the band. So it really is nice and cool for me to meet you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Dave. And I'm willing to bet that you sang Hey Jealousy way, way better than me. But I guess we'll never know.
The first thing I want to say, being a contemporary of yours as a musician, and you know, you reflect back on your life and you see things a little differently, you appreciate it more. How lucky were we to grow up in the musical generation that we did?
Well, I guess we were pretty lucky. You know, when I was a kid, radio was awesome. We had great radio in Phoenix, and you got to hear lots and lots of cool stuff. I'll never forget the first time I ever heard The Cars on the radio. Yeah. And moments like that. And you just played one of my favorite bands, Queen, my all-time favorite band, and Dragon Attack from The Game. The Game is my favorite Queen record. So, you know, as a kid, that was the foundation. And then as a teenager and a young adult in the 80s, there was so much great music happening, and things like REM and The Replacements and Jane's Addiction and The Pixies and The Cure and The Smiths, and so much awesome alternative music. And then, you know, we formed our band in the middle of all that, you know, swimming in the wake of groups like The Replacements and The Smithereens, and hoping we could be something like REM or The Church. And then by the time we actually had a record deal and got up on the chart, there was another revolution happening when alternative music broke through to mainstream. And you had Nirvana and Oasis and Stone Temple Pilots and Soul Asylum, so much great music. So we were lucky, yes, but I worked in record stores all through the 80s, and what I learned is that there's always great music being made. It might not be a part of the popular discourse, it might not be on the radio, but no matter what kind of music you like, somebody is out there doing it better than as good as ever. And I would say that there are some really great alternative rock bands happening right now. A good example would be White Reaper, a very exciting band, and I'm enjoying their music, and it excites me as much as anything I've ever heard in my lifetime. So, cool. Yes, we were lucky, but the kids today are lucky too. It just they have a slightly different delivery mechanism.
Yeah, no doubt. Robin, for all the other Dave Glovers out there who are lifelong musicians and, you know, played in bars and stuff, what was it like to make it? I know that's a big question, but I mean, when you guys hit it about as big as anyone did during that era, I mean, was it just kind of the classic cliche? Like, one day you're working at a record store, the next day you're the Beatles?
Well, in a way, yes, but, you know, we were so caught up in the day-to-day grind of it that it was difficult to sort of step back and see the big picture. And it's only with the perspective of time that you can look back and think about the amazing opportunities we had to commercially succeed. You know, being on shows like Letterman 8 times, and the fact that we got to do Saturday Night Live while we had a top 10 single, those kinds of things are pretty rare, you know. And I hang out with a lot of rock bands, My best friends, most of them are in bands, my contemporaries like Sugar Ray and mm-hmm. Fastball and Toad the Wet Sprocket. And, you know, very few of them got to do the American Music Awards and Saturday Night Live and some of the things that we got to do. So at the time, it's easy to sort of take it for granted because, again, you're caught up in the grind mm-hmm. of just getting back in the van or going back to the airport, and just it was just such a blitz of interviews and shows that it's hard to really see the big picture. But now I look back and I realize that we were very lucky, very fortunate, and we got to do a lot of cool stuff, and that's why we still have a career today. I think that's a big part of it, and mostly I think the reason we still get booked to do shows and we're doing really well is because we have great songs. It comes down to the quality of the songwriting. It's not my voice or the guitar tones or anything, any one thing. It's the foundation is that we wrote good songs, and we're only able to do that because we stood upon the shoulders of giants and we tried to be like our heroes.
Yeah, that's very cool of you, and I completely agree. I mean, there are so many bands that had a couple of standout people, but it really is the songs, and it's the thing about the Gin Blossoms. Like, every time you guys came out with an album, with most artists, like, I might like half the songs. The other half, I'll probably forward through. With you guys, it was the opposite. There were, of course, everyone knows the hits, but there's so many deep cuts that are hits to me, and it was really just like your voice and the guitar tone, it all really mattered, and it just came together right.
Well, thank you. And yes, we're very lucky. I think that, there's something about the synergy of being in a band and it being something more than the sum of its parts. So, we're very lucky, and no one could have told us in those days that we'd still be together in the far future.
Yeah.
And still, and in a lot of ways, we're more successful now than ever before. We sell more concert tickets now than we ever have in our career. And, we're really grateful for that. And so we still work our butts off. And today we're in outside of Denver, Colorado. We're doing a private show at some kind of marketing convention. Mm-hmm. I haven't figured out what the convention is. It doesn't even really matter.
Nah.
But we're doing this private show at this huge resort, and tonight we're going to be on stage performing before Goo Goo Dolls.
Very cool.
it's a good living if you can.
No kidding.
If you can do this, I know that I'm very, very lucky, and I have a lot of respect for musicians such as yourself who were in the fight and on the front lines the whole time too. And I know that we were very fortunate to achieve what we have.
Yeah, well deserved. You brought a lot of happiness to a lot of people. Certainly a lot to me. Coming up this Saturday, so it's Friday and Saturday, and like I said, I've met a lot of you out at Songs for Soldiers before my band played. It's a wonderful, wonderful cause, and it's a great concert. Lots of great local bands and national acts. And then Saturday, the Gin Blossoms will be headlining. Robin, it was a real pleasure talking to you. I appreciate it, and have a great time in St. Louis. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. Looking forward. Have a good day.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 133. This one, I don't know what got us talking about getting into radio and like my first gig 24 years ago and how the first 9 months I was in a studio by myself with a card table and a microphone and the water cooler.
Yeah.
And people would just come walking in the studio in the middle of the show and fill up their water.
And
they had
like,
no idea.
You're just live on the radio.
Yeah.
No. There was no light. No, like
no.
On air light.
No. Yeah. No,
yeah, just talking to himself in there.
That was my very, very first show. And you'll appreciate this, Chris. So my first show, so I lobbied to get a show, and miracle of miracles, I got it. Top 20 market, afternoon drive, no one gets to start like that, and I did. And on my first show, I was so nervous that I was sitting there, and when the little light they had on my desk went on, I really thought about just getting up and leaving. I mean, like, not just a fear, but a real thought. And you know what my thought was? I'm strong enough and fast enough that no one can stop me. I had this like vision in my mind of Jeff Allen tackling me and making me talk into
get
a mic.
Get back in there.
Like, no.
But it was like I was that scared that I almost just stood up and walked out.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And then, so my producer was outside. He wasn't in there with me, but I could see him through a window. And Dr. Laura was on the same station, and she was going after gay people or something like that. And so that was one of my first topics I brought up. And we had taken over for a station called 97.1 The Rock, which was kicking the crap out of Casey. And they had a lot of really devoted listeners who were pissed that suddenly there's a talk station on. And one of them called, and he said, I have some questions about being gay. I'm like, yes, sir. It's my first call of my career. And he proceeds to ask me questions about gay sex in the most graphic terms possible, using words you cannot say on the air. The F word and lots of other words like that. This is in the first 10 minutes, my very first show. And I look out at my producer, and he's holding a conversation with someone else. He's not listening.
Oh, no. So he can't get rid of him.
So I can't get rid of him.
You don't have a dump button.
I don't have a button. I don't have a hang-up button. I have a dump button.
You have talk back?
No, I had nothing. I had a microphone and a water cooler. So I got myself a drink. So I see Tom hear it and freak out and drop it. But that was my first 10 minutes on the air.
Oh, my God. Well, welcome to the show.
Then, you'll love this. My second day, a storm hits and blows out all the stations.
I love that.
Everyone's
story.
Off the air. And it's kind of a warmer day, and the air conditioning's out, and no one's on the air. And Tom, once again, says, just keep doing the show. And that way, when it kicks on, you'll just be talking. And so it's my second day. And I'm like, you mean talk into a dead mic? And he goes, yep, that's the industry standard. Just keep talking. And so the door's open because the air's off. And my voice is already not a radio voice. It's like two octaves higher than this. And I'm just like, so anyway, that's the way I see the topic. And John Hewlett walks into the studio eating like a bowl of borscht or something and starts talking about me like I'm not there. He turns to someone else. He goes, who's this? And he goes, I don't know. It's a talk station. And he goes, does he know he's not on the air? And I think it's Favaz goes, I don't know. And John goes, that effing sucks. And he walks off. John Hewlett, my childhood idol, just judged me in front of me. That was day two.
I love those two guys, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. That's really fun. What? That's not the industry standard.
No.
Industry.
Right. No, when everything's off, you just shut up.
By day three, I figured that out.
Yeah. was he just pranking you?
No. I think
he thought that was it.
He thought...
All right.
The best thing to do here to keep my talent from freaking out is just keep him talking. So.
Why would that freak out? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well.
I can just picture, because I know the room that you were in, like people walking in with the water cooler.
Yeah.
And just going like, hey, Dave, how you doing?
And then the guy
while you're on the air.
Once a week would come in and change it out, and it'd make a giant glug-glug sound.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That's the best.
So it's just me doing the show, and then you just hear glug-glug-glug.
Why wasn't there a studio dedicated for that?
I just don't think they thought it would last. I mean, I really think when they bought the 97.1 signal, I know this for a fact now, because once I had success, they're like, get this, big boy. They basically put on something that they thought no one would listen to, because they wanted everyone to forget. Just forget 97.1's a signal. We'll do this talk thing for a few months. Then we'll put on a real music station.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you want people to not listen, they hired me. So,
well, they didn't know.
No, they didn't. One thing they did not was no. And then Rick Bayless, who is my program director, John Beck, who I love both those men for the rest of their lives, so good to me. John Beck was the market manager, and he was in Seattle in the Space Needle on a vacation with his wife. and Rick Bayless called, and he just moaned into the phone. Rick just kept moaning, and John thought like one of his kids had died or something. Like he was like on the edge of despair, and he goes, "Rick, what is it?" And he goes, "It's Dave Glover. He's just so awful.
Oh,
he's just so bad." But he's a lawyer, and if we fire him, he'll probably sue us. Because back then, I was doing a legal call-in show, and I didn't know anything about the law. Like, I was a terrible lawyer. So I would spend 2 hours a day committing malpractice. Like, yeah.
You should still threaten to sue anyway.
Yeah, maybe I could go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave was in the background getting a glass of water going, "I sure will."
But I remember when they told, like, they waited a couple years to even tell me that. And when they did, it was one of those, like, that's funny, boys.
They thought you would take it better?
Yeah, they thought I would think it was really charming and funny.
That's really funny. I really thought you...
You were so awful.
Always thought I was doing a good job.
Oh, well, thanks,
guys.
I know
you felt that way.
Wheels, what was your first time on the air?
Like professionally or just in general? I mean, I did the college thing, so you got a little bit of that. The first time I was on a real radio station, I was just out of college, waiting tables, and you probably know him. Kevin Matthews used to be the morning host in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So it was him before Danny Bonaducci. That's kind of like the morning. So, and it was a rock station. Mm-hmm. And my wife listened to Kevin Matthews every morning, and they did a thing, and they said, they just put a call out, say, "Hey, anybody out there that's looking to get into the business, if you're a young person, we're going to have some people in the studio audience, and we want you guys to do it." So she called in and got me on the list.
Wow. Let's
so go. I went to do that, and I listened to the show, but not like regularly. I wasn't a big regular. But it was interesting because Kevin Matthews was in his own little booth by himself, mm-hmm. and then you had like the rest of the crew out in the studio, and then the studio audience was in a separate little room, and you're just sitting there waiting for your turn, and he was just calling people in to do things. And he called me in because they did a little screener thing, and he had me read the sports cast. So instead of the sports guy, he's like, "Hey, why don't you do that? That's what you want to do, right? You did that in college. What's your name? Where'd you go to school and all that?" I started answering, and he goes, "Whoa, big boy voice." And I was like, yeah. And then I did the thing, and we talked for like 2 minutes, and that was it. That was the first time on a real professional radio station.
That's pretty cool.
It was funny. I had a blast with it because I saw how much fun they were having. I'm like, yeah, I like this. This is kind of cool.
My very, very first time on the air as a guest. So I was an advertiser, and I had a mediation company where I'd mediate divorces. And Courtney from the Courtney Show, Courtney Landrum, dear friend, was the producer of Stephen DC. And so I'm on Stephen DC, giant morning show. And you know how we have our advertisers on? They had me on to talk about mediation. And so they had people call in. And people would be like, "Yeah, I'm getting divorced, and my wife and I have $500,000 in 401k. We have three kids." And I would just go, "Yes, I could mediate that." And so I gave no details. And after about three of those, Courtney puts a piece of paper in front of me that says, "Answer the GD question."
That's great.
That was my auspicious start.
I love that.
And I welcome back, guys. DGS 133. This one, we're just, I don't know what got us talking about getting into radio and like my first gig 24 years ago and how the first 9 months I was in a room, a studio by myself with a card table and a microphone and the, what do you call it, the water cooler?
Yeah.
And people would just come walking in the studio in the middle of the show and fill up their water.
And
they had
like,
no idea.
You're just
live
on the radio. Yeah.
No. There was no light. No, like, on-air light.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah, just talking to himself in there.
That was my very, very first show. And you'll appreciate this, Chris. So my first show, so I lobbied to get a show. And miracle of miracles, I got it. You know, top 20 market, afternoon drive. No one gets a start like that. And I did. And on my first show, I was so nervous that I was sitting there, and when the little light they had on my desk went on, I really thought about just getting up and leaving. I mean, like, not just a fear, but a real thought. And you know what my thought was? I'm strong enough and fast enough that no one can stop me. I had this like vision in my mind of Jeff Allen tackling me and making me talk into
get
a mic.
Get back in there.
Like, no.
But it was like, I was that scared that I almost just stood up and walked out.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And then So my producer was outside. He wasn't in there with me, but I could see him through a window. And Dr. Laura was on the same station, and she was going after gay people or something like that. And so that was one of my first topics I brought up. And we had taken over for a station called 97.1 The Rock, which was kicking the crap out of KSHE. And they had a lot of really devoted listeners who were pissed that suddenly there's a talk station on. And one of them called, and he said, I have some questions about being gay. I'm like, yes, sir. It's my first call. First call of my career. And he proceeds to ask me questions about gay sex in the most graphic terms possible, using words you cannot say on the air. The F word and lots of other words like that. This is in the first 10 minutes of my very first show. And I look out at my producer, and he's holding a conversation with someone else. He's not listening.
Oh, no. So he can't get rid of him.
So I can't get rid of him. I don't
have a dump button.
I don't have a button. I don't have a hang-up button. I have a dump button.
You have talk back?
No, I had nothing. I had a microphone and a water cooler. So I got myself a drink. So I see Tom hear it and freak out and drop it. But that was my first 10 minutes on the air.
Oh, my God. Well, welcome to the show.
Then, you'll love this. My second day, a storm hits and blows out all the stations. Everyone's off the air. And it's kind of a warmer day, and the air conditioning's out, and no one's on the air. And Tom, once again, says, just keep doing the show. And that way, when it kicks on, you'll just be talking. And so it's my second day. And I'm like, you mean talk into a dead mic? And he goes, yep, that's the industry standard. Just keep talking. And so the door's open because the air's off. And my voice is already not a radio voice. It's like two octaves higher than this. And I'm just like, so anyway, that's the way I see the topic. And John Hewlett walks into the studio eating like a bowl of borscht or something and starts talking about me like I'm not there. He turns to someone else. He goes, who's this? And he goes, I don't know. It's a talk station. And he goes, does he know he's not on the air? And I think it's Favaz goes, I don't know. And John goes, that effing sucks. And he walks off. John Hewlett, my childhood idol, just judged me in front of me. That was day two.
I love those two guys, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. That's really fun. What? That's not the industry standard.
No.
Right. No, when everything's off, you just shut up.
Day three, I figured that out.
Yeah. Was he just pranking you?
No. I think he thought
all right,
the best thing to do here to keep my talent from freaking out is just keep him talking. So.
Why would that? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
I can just picture because I know the room that you were in, like people walking in with the water cooler.
Yeah,
and just going like, "Hey, Dave, how you doing?"
And then the guy
you're on the
once a week would come in and change it out, and it'd make a giant glug glug sound.
Oh, yeah,
that's the best.
So it's just me doing the show, and then you just hear glug glug glug.
I don't get it. Like, why wasn't there a studio dedicated for that?
I just don't think they thought it would last. I mean, I really think when they bought the 97.1 signal, I know this for a fact now, because once I had success, they're like, get this, big boy. They basically put on something that they thought no one would listen to, because they wanted everyone to forget. Just forget 97.1's a signal. We'll do this talk thing for a few months. Then we'll put on a real music station.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you want people to not listen, they hired me. So,
well, they didn't know.
No, they didn't. One thing they did not was know. And then Rick Bayless, who is my program director, John Beck, who I love both those men for the rest of their lives, so good to me. John Beck was the market manager, and he was in Seattle in the Space Needle on a vacation with his wife. And Rick Bayless called. And he just moaned into the phone. Rick just kept moaning. And John thought like one of his kids had died or something. Like he was like on the edge of despair. And he goes, Rick, what is it? And he goes, it's Dave Glover. He's just so awful.
Oh.
He's just so bad. But he's a lawyer. And if we fire him, he'll probably sue us. Because back then I was doing a legal call-in show, and I didn't know anything about the law. Like, I was a terrible lawyer. So I would spend 2 hours a day committing malpractice. Like, yeah.
You should still threaten to sue anyway.
Yeah, maybe I could go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave was in the background getting a glass of water going, I sure will.
But I remember when they told, like, they waited a couple years to even tell me that. And when they did, it was one of those, like, that's funny, boys.
They thought you would take it better?
Yeah, they thought I would think it was really charming and funny.
That's really funny. I really thought you...
You were so awful.
Always thought I was doing a good job.
Oh, well, thanks,
you know,
guys.
That way.
Wheels, what was your first time on the air?
Like professionally or just in general? I mean, I did the college thing, so you got a little bit of that. The first time I was on a real radio station, I was just out of college, waiting tables, and you probably know him. Kevin Matthews used to be the morning host in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So it was him before Danny Bonaducci. That's kind of like the morning. So, and it was a rock station. Mm-hmm. And my wife listened to Kevin Matthews every morning, and they did a thing, and they said, they just put a call out, say, hey, anybody out there that's looking to get into the business, if you're a young person, we're going to have some people in the studio audience, and we want you guys to do it. So she called in and got me on the list.
Wow.
I went to do that, and I listened to the show, but not like regularly. I wasn't a big regular. But it was interesting because Kevin Matthews was in his own little booth by himself, and then you had like the rest of the crew out in the studio, and then the studio audience was in a separate little room, and you're just sitting there waiting for your turn, and he was just calling people in to do things. And he called me in because they did a little screener thing, and he had me read the sports cast. So instead of the sports guy, he's like, hey, why don't you do that? That's what you want to do, right? You did that in college. What's your name? Where'd you go to school and all that? I started answering, and he goes, whoa, big boy voice. And I was like, yeah. And then I did the thing, and we talked for like 2 minutes, and that was it. That was the first time on a real professional radio station.
That's pretty cool.
It was funny. I had a blast with it because I saw how much fun they were having. I'm like, yeah, I like this. This is kind of cool.
My very, very first time on the air as a guest. So I was an advertiser, and I had a mediation company where I'd mediate divorces. And Courtney, from the Courtney Show, Courtney Landrum, dear friend, was the producer of Stephen DC. And so I'm on Stephen DC, giant morning show. And you know how we have our advertisers on? They had me on to talk about mediation. And so they had people call in. And people would be like, yeah, I'm getting divorced, and my wife and I have $500,000 in 401k. We have three kids. And I would just go, yes, I could mediate that. And so I gave no details. And after about three of those, Courtney puts a piece of paper in front of me that says, answer the GD question.
That's great.
That was my auspicious start.
I love that.
And I really would. I would just lean into mine and go, yes, I could mediate that.
I love the people. It's a call-in show to get advice, and your advice is, oh, yeah, I could handle that.
Yeah,
could,
call
I,
me. Pay me.
Yeah,
I could do
I know.
This.
I know what to do with that. Yes, well, what? Tell me.
Can't that's give away stuff. The secrets.
Yeah, that's going to cost you.
Yeah.
I could tell you what to do, but you're going to owe me.
Yeah.
Put me awesome. On retainer.
We had a big seminar. So they convinced me to do a bunch of promos and rent out the Viking room at the Hyatt, you know, and have like heavy hors d'oeuvres and the whole bit. And it was on like a Thursday night, bringing people in who might need mediations, but they forgot to promote it. So they didn't promote it until the day of, and two people showed up. Mm. I have a giant hall full of food. And two people were there.
Yeah, leftovers.
Wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
Not a great success.
No. You're like, you guys can take some of that home if you want.
Yeah.
Like I said, we can just go get a table in the restaurant if you want. I mean, like.
Yeah.
Right.
Once in a while, things like that, you pull up things like that, and things, they just don't work, and you're just like, this is weird.
One time I did, this is probably a couple years in, so I had had pretty good success, and we would bring pretty good crowds out, you know, to appearances and things like that, and I went to do it at like a home builder, whatever, not a home builder, but like Mosby kind of stuff.
Okay, okay.
And I get there. And Craig, my buddy Craig Lombardi, was the salesperson, and he always loved me, and he always really oversold me. And I get there, and they said, The police will be here in about 10 minutes to set up a perimeter because we understand so many people are going to show up.
Oh, no.
And I laughed because I thought that's a pretty good joke. And then I realized she's dead serious. So it was like, if a president were coming,
they
had gates and stuff set up, like for the 1,000 people in line, and they had food, and oh man,
that sucks.
Craig left that one early.
Yeah,
he may have made some certain promises.
It goes to show you how expectations are, because we had a good crowd.
Yeah,
a couple hundred people show up.
That's a great crowd,
but they looked at it as an abject failure.
Yeah. That's. If you got a couple hundred people, that is a great live crowd.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, we would do here on KMOX, like when we had the Blues back in the day, Curbs and I did a lot of the, Curbs did the whole thing, but we did Sports Open Line as part of our Blues Summer Caravan. So you'd like once a week go out to a Hot Shots here, Lester's, go over to the East Side. And, you know, you would have really good crowds in general, but if you had like David Backus, you had a massive.
Then they'd show up.
If you had TJ Oshie, you had lines out the door.
Yes.
Like the popularity of that athlete, because it was, everybody wants autographs, and, you know, it's a little bit different experience than meeting the radio dude.
I love the story about you having to do the show talking about the Blues, and you're in the room where they're eating breakfast.
Oh, do you know this, Dave?
No.
Oh,
can you tell it after the break?
Whenever you want.
We'll tell it right after the break. 153 DGS. So, what's your story?
All right, so this would have been shortly after I switched from KMOX to another station, doing mornings. It was like, I think at the time it was like 9 to noon or 9 to 1. But we were doing a lot of stuff with the Blues, and I had been the Blues pregame and postgame guy for years here at KMOX. So I knew the coaching staff, I knew the players, the front office guys, the media relations. I knew everybody pretty well because I was there every day. I was on all the skates most of the time. I skipped a few. But mostly I was there every day. So everybody there knew me. Well, when I had switched, they put us over there to do the show for a practice, right? Because the practice is in the morning. And what I didn't know is they put the broadcast location in the dining room where the players all eat breakfast.
Awkward.
So I'm in there doing the show, and I'm like, at first, nobody's there because we're there before them, and I'm just doing the show. And then the food starts to get put out. I'm like, oh, there's food in here? Who's going to
really
be in here?
Taking care of me?
And then the players start coming in, and they're rolling in, and they're like looking at me. They're like side-eyeing me, like, what is going on? And I'm like, hands in the air, like, I don't know. So they're all just sitting down eating breakfast, and I'm doing a radio show. I'm doing some Blues talk, some football, some Cardinals or whatever, and they're just all like, Alex Steen gave me the dirtiest look. And no disrespect, I loved Alex. He's a great guy, but he's just like, why are you here? And I'm just the whole time like, and then in the breaks, I'm going up to all of them like, sorry guys, I didn't know they put me here, and I didn't know this was gonna happen. Like, this is gonna be in there, and they weren't mad, but they were just like, now they're giving it to me like it's my fault.
Yeah,
which is fine. But several of them stopped over and came on the show and did all that during it. But it was so awkward.
Did you stop talking about the team when they walked in?
Kinda.
Yeah.
Like, but it was all at the time it was all good though. Like they were playing really well. That lead up to 2019. So they were good there for a long period. So it wouldn't have been awkward about the content, but it would have been weird to be like, yeah, boy, David Perron, yeah, rough night last night. Hi, David. How you doing, buddy?
How's that sausage?
I think they should sit this guy.
Yeah.
He shouldn't get back out there.
Yeah, I knew the fellas pretty well from being there, but not well enough for that.
You ever have an athlete get mad at you?
A few times, but nothing crazy. No. I mean, I'm sure many times that were not expressed that way, but no, mostly no.
I had one guy, Scott Podsednik.
He got mad at you?
Not mad at me.
Oh, okay.
I love the guy though.
Yeah.
He was an outfielder, you know, fast, a leadoff guy, and he was not playing well. This is like the year or two after they won the World Series, and he's not playing very well. So doing a post game. And callers are like, you know, maybe Pods shouldn't be playing all the time. And I go, yeah, you know, something to the effect of it wouldn't be a bad idea for him to be a platoon player or whatever. Next day in the dugout, he goes, Ronj, platoon player, come on. Come on, Ronj. Sorry.